This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, chapters 5 and 6. Weasley's Wizard Wheezes and the Portkey. In these chapters, Molly Weasley lays it in on the twins.
Yes, she does. Yes,
and I felt it. I didn't feel a whole nice way about it.
Yes. Good. Yeah.
And then we are exposed to another form of transportation. Portkeys, which all seem to suck. All forms of transportation in this world seem to suck, like in our world.
Yes. Amen to that. Yeah, that was that chapter. I think I overthought it. That's what I'll say. I think I overthought it, but
okay.
Yeah.
So at chapter 5, we immediately, you know, begin where we left off, where Harry has just emerged from the fire and is now in the kitchen in the Burrow. And Fred is just like, did he eat it?
Right. Right. The immediately with the toffee, that ton tongue toffee. So this is like a creation of Fred and George's, right? They have this whole little, they're making all these gag things.
Yeah, like they didn't even buy it. Like this is something that they've invented and they've been dying to test it on somebody.
So Lucky Dudley, which I mean, we all probably can agree that that's fine. If you test it on Dudley, he's a jerk anyway. So,
So yeah, I don't... Again, we've already went through the whole, like, you know, is it ethical for, you know, well, wait, never mind. I went off to something else. So Harry is in the kitchen and there's lots of people sitting at the table and there are two redheads he has never met before, but he automatically realizes who they must be. What did you think of being introduced to the eldest, Bill and Charlie?
Bill and Charlie. Well, I think that this is a funny definition of what cool is. That made me kind of laugh. I also was wondering, there were a lot of mentions of dragons in this chapter. I was a little confused because Bill, who's like super cool, is wearing boots made out of dragon hide. And I was like, whoa. What is this about? So that just surprised me. I didn't know that, like, alligator skin, dragon hide, I don't know. I was very confused by that.
Yeah, so basically in this world, to have anything made out of dragon hide, to be wearing anything, that is a sign of wealth.
Oh, okay.
So I think it implies that, you know, Bill works as a curse breaker for Gringotts Bank.
Okay.
And so basically he's kind of like the closest equivalent to like Indiana Jones, like getting all this gold and artifacts and these probably these old temples and, you know, things like that.
So he's a big deal, basically.
So he's a big deal and I'm sure he gets bonuses and extra commissions and stuff for all the gold and crap that he brings back to the bank.
That I just was thought it was so interesting that we talk like kind of the duality that we have. Was it Charlie, right? Charlie, who's like out there in Romania taking care of dragons, and then his brother's showing up with some, you know, dragon hide boots.
Yeah, like we have yet, I don't know, the I have no idea. I don't know how bad, you know, good or badly dragons are treated in terms of, because you constantly see like dragon's blood and other elements of dragon, like in the marketplace, you know, in Diagon Alley, right, and other places. So there's, it's not like, you know, it's not like in the sense of, at least in, you know, for the last 10 years, it, you know, a lot of people would look down upon if you were wearing real fur.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's definitely not the thing, you know, in okay. this world, at least in the 90s.
That's, yeah, I think that, I mean, of course I thought about that just because that's something I think about, animal things. But I also thought dragons were really rare. That's why it surprised me a little bit that there were enough dragons around to make boots, but maybe that makes them more like expensive. It's like a mink coat or something. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know a lot about furs. Sorry, everybody. I try not to wear leather.
It's never implied that dragons or any particular dragon species are endangered. It's more about because you know, there are so many of them, they have to, you know, keep certain regulations or have certain sanctuaries to make sure the Muggles don't see them or find them.
That makes sense. It also, we are not to the Portkey chapter yet, but I have a lot of questions in that chapter. So mm-hmm. we'll get there.
Yep. And then we get Charlie. And you know how I always question, oh, I want to be like Charlie. I want to be with the dragons. But just all the description of Charlie's burns.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
I forgot how callous and like Harry can feel the blisters in his palm as he shakes his hand. And I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, that's a little intense. That's kind of like the not fun part, I guess, of animal handling. It made me think of Jurassic Park and Chris Pratt with the little velociraptors or whatever the hell they are. Don't judge me. It's been a while since I've seen that.
No, they're
movie.
Velociraptors.
Okay. All right. I thought they were some combo or whatever. But, that just makes, that's what, like the image that I conjured up when I thought about Charlie and his dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
Indeed. Although I would go as far to say that at least in like Jurassic World with Chris Pratt, I would say he has far more control of those velociraptors than Charlie seems to have with the dragons.
Yeah. He didn't seem to be too bitten up. So interesting. That's funny. But this is like, this whole setting is just like, how many redheads can we get in one place? Like, there are a ton of Weasleys around.
Yeah, because there are 7 Weasleys, you know, the 6 boys and 1 girl. Again, 7, very magically charged number for this series.
Yes, yes. Funny.
So, who did you like more, Bill or Charlie?
You know, I don't know if I, like, had a lot of affections either way. I think Charlie definitely has the more interesting job. But I mean, Cursebreaker is pretty interesting too. Bill seems to be a little more flashy about his profession than Charlie. I don't know. Somebody like Charlie is like more my speed. What about you?
Yeah, well, you just thinking about it, I wasn't thinking about it when I read it, but just the idea of you saying Bill being so flashy, what does it say that he went into this profession after coming from a very lower socioeconomic household?
Right. I think I've seen that in, you know, real life too. Like people that kind of come out of a place where they don't have a lot of money and then they get money and it's like, oh God, I got to make sure everybody knows it because my whole life growing up, like I didn't have it. So that's kind of an interesting thing. And the very real thing, I think too, to have Bill have that trait.
Yeah. So they get introduced and then Mr. Weasley finally comes back and he is pissed.
I'm having a brain.
Yeah. That wasn't funny, Fred, he shouted. What on earth did you give that Muggle boy? I didn't give him anything, said Fred with another evil grin. I just dropped it. It was his fault he went and ate it. I never told him to. You dropped it on purpose.
Which we know he did drop it on purpose. Okay, now it's all coming back to me. But I think this is kind of where we slowly get introduced to the different, like the notes. I'm a little ahead of myself. But they knew exactly what they were doing. They also knew their victim was kind of little consequence. I mean, to Harry, it's not like his beloved brother that they're going to, you know, his beloved Muggle brother. They could mess with Dudley and kind of see how this worked.
Yeah, and Mr. Weasley is really upset because that sort of behavior seriously undermines wizard-muggle relations. I spend half my life campaigning against the mistreatment of muggles and my own sons. We didn't give it to him because he's a muggle, said Fred indignantly. No, we gave it to him because he's a great bullying git, said George. And so, what do you think in terms of, is, you know, I'm kind of, I tend to lean towards the, yeah, Dudley deserves it, like his comeuppance. But at the same time, like, even if he deserves it, is it the responsibility of wizards to not, you know, because they, wizards constantly have the upper hand with muggles because right. they have magic. So,
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I don't know what sort of like retaliation a muggle could have against a wizard. They're kind of SOL. Like, they don't really have anything. What could Dudley do? And then I'm also thinking, like, we talked about when he had his pigtail, he had to go find a doctor. We're kind of assuming it was somebody that might know something about the wizarding world. So there's got to be some connection to get that tongue situation figured out. But yeah, I mean, Dudley's not anyone's favorite, probably. If somebody, it is somebody's favorite, that's very interesting. So you kind of feel like, well, he kind of deserves it, but then also like maybe something a little less magical could have been.
Yeah, it's an interesting notion of, because I feel like the trend is lately, you know, I think I mentioned this in Home Before Dark, either Home Before Dark or Wife Upstairs when we were doing the Sublimely Gothic podcast, the notion of like, people are so upset and really frustrated that people aren't getting justice through the normal mechanisms that a lot of people are sort of sanctioning this sort of, you know, darker Robin Hood type of vigilante activity.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about that because sometimes it's like, I don't know. I guess maybe I'm more and more jaded. It's just like some bullies get away with it. And then it's just, you know, and I'm thinking of one particular bully who may have been a president in the not too distant past, but, and you know, everybody's hoping all this, you know, oh, he gets his comeuppance, but it's not going to happen. He's just going to live his life and he's going to die and whatever. So, I don't know how I feel about that. I think, I mean, you know, again, I don't know what the result was after he was done with this candy. Maybe his tongue shrunk down and it was fine for a while. So I guess the level of depravity, but I guess I do understand Mr. Weasley's irritation with them in his, you know, position and kind of why he's upset.
Yeah, I tend to be more thinking more about it rather because this is something that happened in the privacy of like the Dursley home and like wasn't going out and like, and it wasn't. And to be perfectly frank, you know, the Dursleys were already poisoned against the wizarding world anyway. Like, there's right. not like you could alienate them even more.
Right.
So in terms of like wizard muggle relations, it's not like they were being receptive and got this really nasty shock. Like, they hated wizards anyway. So I'm just like, meh.
Yeah, they should have done something like really cool for Dudley and like maybe convinced him to, you know, like we said, that kind of scenario we played out last time where maybe wouldn't it be interesting if Dudley was like super into the wizarding world? That would be more interesting.
Yep. And Mr. Weasley's like, you just wait till I tell your mother. And Mrs. Weasley's immediately there. Tell me what?
Right. Oh, man. They're freaked out. But
yeah, I feel bad for Molly because the good cop bad cop dynamic, it's sad that she has to be bad cop all the time.
Yeah, he definitely, I mean, that's something that I was going to comment on too. It seems like this is the most like frazzled that I've seen Mr. Weasley so far, but Molly usually is like the bad cop. Exactly.
Disciplinarian or whatever.
Yeah. And she starts giving them some grief about their schooling, right? And how they don't, you know, all they want to do is open this joke shop and, you know, they just need to chill, pay attention, mm-hmm. stop screwing around.
Yeah. So Harry, Ron, Hermione. Oh yeah. Hermione's there.
Yeah. That was a surprise to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I wish we had seen more of Hermione's parents throughout the series.
Yeah, she's kind of an enigma as far as we very much get to know the Weasley family and Harry's, you know, kind of, I guess, his family, but, you know, it's hard to call him that. And we don't really know a lot about Hermione.
Yeah. So they go all upstairs while Molly is screaming at Fred and George. And, you know, just, and they bump into Percy. So Percy's now out of Hogwarts.
Yes.
And he works for the Department of International Magical Cooperation, which could be very interesting. Like, to me, this is like the State Department. Like, you, like, this could be really interesting, but what is he doing?
Measuring the thickness of cauldrons, like cauldron whatever. What else?
Trying to standardize thickness of cauldrons so they don't leak.
I mean, it sounds like a worthwhile cause, I guess, but kind of boring for sure.
So it's just of all the things that he could be doing. So.
Right. Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, he's always been kind of like a very regimented, like a rule follower. So I guess.
Stickler.
Like, yeah, he's definitely a stickler. So it's probably a good job for him. Nothing too exciting. He probably had enough excitement at Hogwarts with his brother and Harry there. So he needs to like take it easy for a while.
Yep. And so, yeah, Harry goes up and we finally realize that Pig is actually the nickname of the owl.
Yeah, and I don't know what this Pigwidgeon, I don't know what that means.
I do not know either. Should I look it up?
I thought about it too. Okay, I'm not going to close anything. I just see small or petty.
Oh, like according to the Merriam-Webster dictionary online, an insignificant or simple person.
How rude. That little owl is adorable. He should not be considered insignificant.
Yeah. But yeah, I like Pigwidgeon, and it was Ginny who named him.
Aw, good for Jenny. I didn't really know that Jenny and Hermione had like a friendship to the point where she would be like at their house because they're kind of hanging out together, right? Mm-hmm. Jenny and...
Well, I think Hermione's there for both of them, for Ron. And again, because this is from Harry's perspective, like, it's kind of funky that it's really for the fourth book and the fifth book, we get to a point where we realize, oh, Hermione has this whole thing going on with Ginny, and we just, like, never hear about it. Like, it just pops up that Hermione knows things about Ginny that not even Ron knows about because she's a girl and she tells her.
That just kind of took me, I was a little surprised by that. I was like, where was this in the other books? Like, where did they, I mean, so I guess this is beginnings, but like you said, she's kind of there for both of them. And she brought Crookshanks with her, which was good.
Who likes to chase the garden gnomes?
Yes. And that was, I forgot what the second book where they were like de-gnoming the garden. Okay. They're still there. That's funny.
Yeah, Pigwidgeon zoomed happily around his cage, hooting shrilly. Harry knew Ron too well to take him seriously. He had moaned continually about his old rat Scabbers, but he had been most upset with Hermione's cat. Crookshanks appeared to have eaten him.
Well, we saw his old Mr. Scabbers at the beginning of this book, so.
Indeed. So, Harry tries to breach the subject of Sirius, but they have to stop themselves because Ginny doesn't know anything about that. For as much as it seems that maybe Hermione and Ginny have a budding, you know, friendship, Hermione has yet to disclose, like, the shenanigans of the Golden Trio.
That's for the best. Good for her, because, like, she's keeping that friendship kind of locked down, but interesting.
And so they end up going back downstairs, and Molly is still ranting about the twins. Okay. So I was starting to think about this in terms of, you know, again, we saw Bill. Clearly, it's a sort of like quote unquote day job in terms of that he works for an employer, you know, right. But he's, you know, out, you know, doing Indiana Jones shit. So that's one kid's response from such a, you know, a certain low socioeconomic household. And then we have Charlie, who ran off, like, went across the country to be with dragons. We have Percy, who is responding to that by being the very regimented, wanting to go into, you know, a bureaucracy like the Ministry of Magic.
Right.
And now we have the twins who are responding to it by taking the entrepreneurial route.
Right, exactly.
So how did you feel about, you know, Molly's ranting of theirs, you know, of their ambitions and diminishing all of their creative hopes?
I think that it's reminds me of, now I don't know what the like evolution of this will be. I'm assuming they'll be successful. I do know one thing. I'm not going to spoil it. So I won't say anymore. I think that's something that I kind of missed when I was growing up. It, like, you can kind of have a stable job, but you can also have like your side and something to enjoy on the side. And you can kind of like go, I hope this other thing works out. You know, for me, it's painting. I think it's interesting the different avenues that they've presented, like given their background. But I think that entrepreneurship, I can't say that word very well, is not easy. It's a lot of work on top of your already work. So I guess I would take the attitude of good for them. Now, it sounds like they're, in Molly's mind, they're letting their like grades slip or something. So because of this.
Yeah, I was just reminded of all the times when my parents were not supportive of my creative projects.
Well, that's not fun.
Because it's the sense of, we saw with the tongue-tied toffee, like, they're pranks, like, the idea is, oh, they're, like, not bookish smart, but they have to be smart to a certain extent to be able to develop this sort of stuff.
Right,
and they said, like, they heard explosions coming out of their room, like, you know, they thought it was just, you know, noise and being stupid, but they were actually doing, like, probably very scientific, you know, magical experimentation. So it's like, they're not dumb. And I just, you know, Molly could say, okay, if you want to, like, if you want to work on this as your hobby, fine, but, like, don't test it out on unsuspecting muggles. That's not, you know, a good thing. But, and it made me very sad because I didn't realize how steadfast she was against it.
You know,
Seeing it, again, not seeing, you know, the talent they and work they put into it. And again, because she, like, burns all their order forms.
That's horrible. It makes me think that maybe like her strong reaction is because she's like, no, get the practical job, like go on the secure route that you know you're not going to end up like me, kind of, you know, you're not going to have a house that's falling apart full of kids that, you know, you have to rewear robes and things like that. Like this gamble could not pay off. So that's where she's kind of coming from. Or it could pay off significantly. So, you know, I think that in our creative endeavors, we want that kind of support. Like, yeah, cool. Maybe it will pay off instead of like, go to work or something like that.
Yeah, especially I think it's even more so because Percy is the brother that's just above them, like closest to them in age, you know, on the older side. And so just the stark contrast between how Percy handles his ambition and how the twins handle their ambition. I don't think that's a coincidence. If anything, I think that Fred and George probably partially their sort of talents like are a reaction to the rigidness of Percy.
Yeah.
But and they're trying to define themselves from Percy, Charlie, and Bill.
Cause I was trying to think who's in the middle. So Jenny's the youngest and Bill's the oldest
Bill's the oldest. Okay.
So everybody in the middle is kind of like, I don't know. I'm the oldest child, so I'm like responsible and boring, I guess.
Yeah, but I'm the youngest child. I'm a rebel.
You lucky youngest children. That's so jealous.
But anyway, so yeah, I was just thinking about that because I forgot how much Molly bitches about it. And I was just like, oh, she's a lot meaner about it than I remember that she was.
That's funny. I don't know. She's an interesting character. I'm interested to see where she goes.
Yep. And then they decide to all set the table and, you know, they're going outdoors for their dinner. And that just seemed like such a nice thing, like a nice barbecue, go out, sit under the stars, like with the fireflies. And
I was thinking about just how Harry, you know, felt about this and just what a different experience he's having. And kind of, he's probably never done that with the Dursleys. It's probably, you know, I think you think about, you see a family who's like big and messy and they're just kind of happy to be with each other. And he's coming from a position where he doesn't, this is all new to him. And I'm sure it's very heartwarming for him to see.
Yeah. And what was it? And also making the note of it was, it was like his first substantial meal, because again, at this point he has been surviving on his sugar stash.
Right. Which he says, thank you to them. But I easily forget about, you know, Dudley's diet and how he's eating like a quarter of a grapefruit. Well, less than that. He's not even
doing that. Yeah, and then, because, you know, he had a few meat pies, but again, it was starting to get to the end where he was just eating cake, and it's just like, you know, he's so desperate for like real food.
I don't blame him. I enjoy sweets, but I enjoy pizza more.
I was proud of myself. I cooked spaghetti squash for the first time.
Oh, nice. Oh, yum. Like as spaghetti, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, I had a you know, spaghetti sauce with tomato, beef, and onions, and used the spaghetti squash as the spaghetti, and I was pleasantly surprised of how well it turned out. You know, I've tried other substitution things, like I tried the sort of cauliflower rice.
Yeah.
It's too much, you know, work.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of how good it tastes and things like that. But the spaghetti squash, you know, you just shove it in there for like an hour in the oven and then just scrape it off at the end. And I'm just like, okay, you know, this, I might like this. I might want to use this as a, you know, low carb substitute at home.
I might have to give that a shot because I have not been successful with zoodles or whatever, like zucchini noodles. I screwed.
Yeah. Zoodles.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind zoodles. I'm just not willing to, again, like the level of energy you have to put into like the slicer or whatever, like right. to create zoodles.
And then dry out, get all the water out of them. That was the thing that I didn't get right. So,
yeah. So, spaghetti squash is really easy. Well, it's cut it in half. That's the hardest part, to just cut in half because they're so thick. Scoop out the seeds, you know, drizzle it and, you know, cover it in olive oil with a little salt and pepper and then just bake it in the oven and then you scrape. And then you scrape it, you know, until it's soft, and you scrape all the noodles, quote unquote.
I'll have to give that a shot this fall. That sounds pretty good. Pretty good. Especially with my ice cream habit that I'm not eating ice cream tonight, I swear.
Yeah. Well, again, I need it for my my French fry stress eating habit.
That's what we just French fries and ice cream. It's all good. That's all right.
French fries dipped in chocolate milkshake.
Oh my God, that sounds delicious.
Okay. Anyway, we digress. They are not having spaghetti squash as far as we know, but Harry's just happy listening to all of them, like, you know, talk, you know, over the dinner table. And Percy is trying to get them. Oh, see the top secret thing? Remember, Dad? And like, and they're just like, we refuse to ask him about it on principle because he's so desperate for us to.
That's funny. Man.
And then one interesting thing is during all this dinner, who brings it up? I don't know who, but Bertha Jorkins is mentioned.
Okay. Bertha, yeah, has been missing for over a month now. Okay. So they bring it. I think it's Percy. He's talking about Mr. Crouch and then Bertha Jorkins, who was at the, we talked about at the very beginning, right?
Who we know is dead.
Yes. Okay. That is who Bertha Jorkins is. Okay.
Yeah. So the idea is that Bertha Jorkins used to work with Percy's boss, Mr. Crouch, in the Department of International Magical Cooperation, but she currently works with Ludo Bagman in the Department of Magical Games and Sports.
Okay.
And so it seems like Crouch was once her boss and is kind of showing more interest in the fact that she's gone than her current boss, Bagman.
Okay. I noticed that a couple chapters down, we'll get some more information on those two. But yeah, I thought Bertha Jorkins was a muggle. Maybe I don't know why I thought that.
No, but, I don't know. Well, Frank Bryce was a muggle.
Yeah, maybe that was the confusion, but I don't know. Well, I think after that, then there's like just that they're obviously really excited to go to the Quidditch World Cup. So
of course, because there's like no time in between. Like they're like Harry just arrived and then the next day they're just going to go.
That sounds overwhelming to me.
Yeah, like I personally, like I would love just a and again, they don't know how long the Quidditch match is going to go on for. And like I would have like if I had my way and someone invited me, I want a few days to like get my bearings
right
at the burrow, you know, maybe, you know, pick some apples in the orchard or, you know, right, whatever, and then go to the Quidditch World Cup. But
yeah, this felt a bit like a bit abrupt and I would be very unsettled by that. Like I need to get my bearings. Did they say one of the Quidditch matches lasted for 5 years?
Like 5 days.
5 days. Okay. It's 5 years. I was like, oh my God. 5 days is a bit long too, but I guess they were pretty psyched about it.
Mm-hmm. And so let's see, how does chapter 5 end? Yeah. Well, Percy's complaining he doesn't want it to end, go that long, because I shudder to think of the state my entree would be if I was away from work for 5 days. Yeah, someone might slip dragon dung in it again, eh, Percy? Said Fred. That was a sample of fertilizer from Norway, said Percy, going very red in the face. It was nothing personal. It was, Fred whispered to Harry as they got up from the table. We sent it.
Right. Yeah. That's pretty funny. Yeah, I felt like this chapter was just kind of like
wholesome, Weasley, yeah, family fun.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. So, you know, not too much happened. Just, I don't know, chilling at the burrow.
Charing at the burrow. Nothing wrong with that.
No.
And now we move on to chapter 6, The Portkey.
And as we said, Harry felt as though he barely laid his head down or laying down to sleep in Ron's room when he was being shaken awake by Mrs. Weasley. So no joke. They had some dinner. They went to sleep. And now it's time to get rolling to go to this. Yeah, the
literally they woke up at the crack of dawn and, you know, Bill, Charlie, and Percy don't have to get up early because they can just, like, apparate, aka teleport to yes, the event. But none of the minor children can.
Right. They're all too young and they don't really know how to yet, right?
No, they're not taught. They're not, it's like, it's very much structured in this world that apparition is like driving. You have to take like an 8 or 12 week course and then you get your license.
Oh, cool. That sounds like
it's cute. But even Arthur Weasley was explaining that, you know, you have to have a license. And there was one guy who tried to apparate without one and splinched himself.
That sounds very
What did you think of scary. Splinching?
I think that sounds absolutely awful. Leaving half of yours, like I have so many questions. That's probably very graphic. Yeah. All while they're eating like porridge that this is being discussed. So that's pretty gross.
Yeah. So yeah. So then they Hermione and Ginny come down. Everyone's, you know, really tired, and so there is a little bit of a walk, and Harry's like, we're walking to the Quidditch World Cup, and Arthur Weasley's like, no, but like, you know, so these port keys have only been distributed at certain locations. Right. And so you gotta walk or get to the closest one that's near you, and then that takes you to the campsite, the Quidditch World Cup, like, campsite, whatever.
That is where, like, I'm like, how many modes of transportation here can I keep track of? Because I can't. Because
yeah, we've got apparition teleporting.
Right.
We've got the fire flu network.
Right.
We've got the flying brooms. Car.
Oh yeah, the brooms. Yes.
Magically enchanted items, brooms, cars. Yes. We've got hippogriffs and magical creatures.
Right. And,
although no one's riding dragons in this world, no. Unfortunately. Despite my ideas for the awesome fan fiction where Ron has a dragon and wouldn't be so feel so inadequate. But
that would give him some confidence, wouldn't it?
And then now we have Portkeys, because I sort of envision Portkeys as kind of being like it has the magic of apparition within the object. So you touch the object and right. It takes you where you need to go, you know, so.
Because they all have to be touching this, which I guess my question if a muggle, because it's an object that isn't like too obvious to a muggle to pick up. So that's kind of the intention is like with this boot, they'll just probably leave it alone. Does it have an effect if like somebody was like, I'm going to try this boot on?
Yeah, like I think it's implied that if a muggle were to touch it, they would be magically transported to wherever the portkey is designed to. And so in this specific case, you know, these portkeys have to be put in public places. So right. They really, really have to make sure that the portkeys look really unappealing. Although, again, this is the 90s. People weren't as woke or environmentally right. conscious. I'm just thinking that, you know, I would be scared of people be like, oh, who put this trash out? I'm gonna throw it away.
Right. Yeah. I know people that will do, or at least they did. They did that pre-pandemic. They would like pick up trash if they saw it on the street. Now, I don't know if they do that anymore. But I'm getting ahead of us because I was thinking about the portkey and all of that, but
so let's see. So yeah, they're walking out and then, well, right. Fred and George, like basically don't say goodbye to Mrs. Weasley because she like threw out all their toffees.
I don't blame them. I'd be pretty pissed too.
I would be too. And so, yeah, they're walking, go up the hill and Harry makes the note that Hermione is the last one with like to make it up the hill. And she's like holding her like side because she's got a cramp or something. And I was just like, that was me in hiking 2 days ago.
That's like, so I think this is another effort to like take Hermione down a peg, right? Like it's like, oh, but you know, she's real smart, but she's like not, I guess, physically capable of walking this, but
the stereotypical, she's spending so much time in the library, she's not investing in physical right. exercise as much.
Which, I guess they had to like knock something for her. I don't know.
Yeah, because yeah, I'm out of shape. Like in my prime last year when I was hiking a lot, I could hike our favorite trail 6.7 miles in 2 hours.
Oh my God.
And now I can only do it in 2.5 hours.
Well, I'm going to try to ride my bike tomorrow. We'll see how that goes. Cause I stopped running about a year when I twisted my ankle. So
I can't do running. It's just so boring.
It's for old lady Jess here. It's just too hard on my body. So I just have to.
With your joints. That's why I prefer swimming. You know,
yeah, I don't mind cycling. I would love to do what you do. If there was a place to hike, that would be my preference because there's some meditative quality to that as well. But
yeah, they call it forest bathing.
Forest bathing. I've never heard of that. Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So, but there aren't any places nearby.
Where I live in kind of like Casey proper, so like in the city. So I would have to drive probably. 5 or 6 miles. I don't know. There's a trail that's close by that I put in quotes. But it's more of just like a mode of transportation. It goes through some towns and some crazy stuff has happened on that trail. So I try to stay away from it.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
All those serial killers and rapists ruin it for everybody.
They really do. They really do.
Anyway, we digress. And so they're not the only ones that want to get in on this portkey. So who shows up?
Amos Diggory, Mr. Cedric's dad. Is that who we're talking about?
Yes, Amos yeah. and Cedric Diggory.
Yes, both of them. And
do you remember Cedric Diggory?
Oh, absolutely. I am a huge Twilight fan, and that is played by Robert Pattinson. So yes, I definitely remember. But man, does his dad like really gloat on him here.
Oh my God. What's my notes? Amos sucks so much.
Yeah, he needs to pump the brakes a little bit here.
And the fact that he's, like, lording over a 14-year-old child, like, he's a famous 14-year-old child. It's just creepy in so many ways. And even Cedric's, like, this is why Cedric is a Hufflepuff. Like, he's not asking for the glory. And he's like, Dad, I told you, special circumstances, scary right. Dementors.
Right. He's like, chill, Dad. This was not, like, a... This was, I mean, I'm sure he gave the full story, but it's basically that wasn't something that was something really to brag about. But
yeah, and I'm just like, what is Amos Diggory compensating for that he has to live vicariously through Cedric?
I don't know, but it definitely sounds like he is doing that. And then also, you know, they talk about how Cedric's not a bad looking guy. So I don't know, maybe if they don't really talk about Amos. I don't think in detail about how he looks, but I do like this expression, Merlin's beard. That's a cool thing that he said.
Yeah, so that'll show up plenty in books to come.
Cool.
And let's see. One thing I noticed that, again, Harry, the writer, just likes to throw these in, like, you know, Arthur's asking Amos, like, is there anyone else waiting for this portkey? And I think Amos is like, no, the love goods already arrived a week ago. Right. So we don't think of anything of the time, but the next book we will meet, as you know, Luna Lovegood.
Luna Lovegood. Okay. I know she's a big deal. I don't know. I think we moved past it already. I'm not sure. Yeah, we did. There's kind of another, like, class commentary here. They're talking about the people that have to get there early, you know, like 2 weeks before to get their seats, and kind of I don't remember.
Yeah,
where it was.
So it is a classist thing where you know, they have to stagger the arrivals just because there's just so many people. Like, you know, think of like the Olympics, people showing up for the Olympics, or like the soccer, football, World Cup. And, you know, for Arthur, he typically probably would have gotten those tickets, but clearly working in the Ministry of Magic has done something for Ludo Bagman or whatever. Like, which, again, I put in my notes, but we didn't mention it. Like, the level of sort of backdoor deals that Arthur Weasley seems to get done, because again, he got these tickets special because Ludo, as a sort of thank you, because he sort of smoothed over when Ludo Bagman's brother, like, got in trouble with some sort of muggle artifact.
So this is like basically saying it works the same in both worlds. Like,
yeah, it works the same in both worlds. And even Arthur admitted it to the Dursleys, and it's like, oh, I, you know, muggle fireplaces usually aren't allowed, but I have a buddy who, they're just, you know, like, now that I work in a, like, company now, it's just thinking about those things, and I'm just like, you know, you don't want to think anything bad of, you know, Arthur or anything like that, but it's just, meh.
Yeah, I think I've seen some of those things at play, too, and it, in my work, and I'm kind of like, okay, that's nice. I did think it wasn't, so they would probably be the people with the cheaper tickets have to arrive 2 weeks beforehand. And this is where I'm a couple pages back, they're explaining like the whole process. So that kind of, to me, when we were read about the love goods, I was like, oh, okay, they must not have the like means that, the Diggorys have. So
yeah, not the same means. And Amos, as I think we'll find out later, like he works in the Ministry of Magic. So I think it's the sense that, you know, Ministry of Magic workers can, you know, kind of get in on, you know, certain things.
Okay. Well, lucky them, I guess. I don't know.
And then that's basically it. They go into they touch their port key and vanish away.
I did like the like self-awareness that Harry has, that it suddenly occurred to Harry how odd it would look if a muggle were to walk up here right now, 9 people, 2 of them grown men, and clutching this manky old boot in semi-darkness waiting. I just thought that was really it's like, good for you, Harry. You realize you're like, you gotta kind of peep around and be like, hopefully nobody's seeing us do this weird ritual. I mean, I feel like almost people would be like, well, that's weird, and then just move on. But I don't know. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. And that is chapter 6.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, cool. Not too much. Not too exciting. Just some wholesome Weasley fun and exposure to more magical items.
Magical, and I liked how Harry mentions more characters. I feel like more characters were introduced in this that are of significance. I mean, of course, because they're of the Weasley family, but then, Cedric's dad and mention of these characters. So I thought that was, and then Crouch and shoot, what's his name? Bagman and Crouch. So mm-hmm.
Alrighty then, shall we move on to Gothic Geek Out?
Incredibly hard, but yes, let's go to Gothic Geek Out.
Okay, I'll go first. I have absolutely nothing.
The closest I could get was the mention of where the Quidditch is going to be played on the moors. And I was like, that is a stretch, but I'm going to take it. So, that's so deeply connected to Wuthering Heights. So that was no mention of Quidditch or I don't know of sports in general. Somebody can correct me on that in that book. But
yeah, the only connection really is, again, the moors basically implies like isolation and the wizards need a high degree of isolation to be able to pull off this event without any of the muggles noticing.
That's my, I have some questions about that. So
what?
It won't be my fan fiction, but I was thinking about why don't they find like an island or something? Like they can go wherever. I don't understand. I just kind of was confused by this, they do all these spells so nobody will see them, but I was like, just go to freaking island. I don't know.
Well, that's what they do for the prison.
Yeah, right. So play your Quidditch match there too. I don't know.
Yeah. Have the Quidditch world professionals fall off their broomsticks because of the Dementors.
I don't know if we should be playing this at Azkaban, but, that would add an extra element of danger. So maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, I guess it's also the sense of, Ireland, they're the ones hosting it. So like, again, depending on who is in the finals, because it's Bulgaria and Ireland. So, maybe if it was another country that made it to the finals, if they had Portugal and made it to the finals, then they could have, had the Quidditch World Cup on those islands called the Azores.
There we go. Okay.
Which is where my mother was born, on a military base.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting to know.
Anyway, you're more creative than me. I tried really hard, like thinking about it all day, and I'm like, no, I can't do it.
It was a stretch. I knew I was just like, I clung to that one thing. Because like you said, this is a very wholesome, very like non-Hogwarty, gothic-y chapters. These were not those chapters, so.
Alrighty then. So we can move on to Tarot of the Day. And so let's see. Last week was a Four of Pentacles. We also get another four this week, but it's the Four of Swords.
Four of Swords for book four. Okay.
Exactly. From Escaping, number four of Privet Drive.
So many fours.
Many, many fours. So the Four of Swords tells you to rest before you take on the next challenge. You have reached an important first milestone and must recharge your energy before the next phase begins, so you are refreshed and ready to go. Even if you are highly productive and driven, take time out of your busy schedule to restore your energy and heal the body and the mind.
So my kind of analysis of that so far, I feel like we're in these chapters, it's the calm before the storm, and probably because of the first chapter with all the Voldemort stuff. So this might be the rest before the something is going to happen. These seem incredibly tame, these chapters. Like, not much is happening yet, so.
Mm-hmm. I think of, in terms of, again, the sense of repose, I think even though we were just talking about how hectic mm-hmm. everything is and how quickly that Harry only has a day, or really, half a day, you know, dinner with the Weasleys before he's getting up and going to the Cup. But I think, you know, going to the Burrow, even for that short period of time, is a sort of mental break where of recharging his wizard batteries, where it's like, oh, I'm with my people again, and I'm it's okay for me to be a wizard again, and like all of those things before going to this, you know, huge, you know, magical sport event. Because imagine just going cold turkey from, you know, the Dursleys directly right. to the Quidditch World Cup when you haven't touched or been with any come across anything magical in like two months.
Yeah, that's a good point. And this is kind of like his little bit of like preview to the wizarding world without being overwhelmed by like, you know, all the wizards and all the wizard Quidditch stuff that's impending.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So for me, the being at the Burrow and all of that was the sort of buffer mentally that he needed before venturing forth to the Quidditch World Cup.
I like that. I like that. That's good.
Alrighty, and now we go on to the rune of the day, which is Hagalaz, which is the letter H.
Okay.
Keywords are destruction, chaos, interference, misfortune, and transformation.
Okay.
The first rune of Hagalaz Et translates to hail and points to the fact that we cannot always control our circumstances. Even with all of the technology we possess in modern times, nature can step in at any moment with destructive forces that flatten cities and even countries. Hailstorms may be brief and localized compared to larger natural disasters, but the balls of ice... Oh, so yeah, so literally it means hail as... I thought it was hail as in like how... Like hail yeah, as like, in like worship something? It's hail as in like...
Like natural
like storming
hail.
Down.
Okay, oh...
Okay, I'm dumb. I'm sorry.
No. When you were reading that, I was like, I had no idea.
Yeah, so while this may be a frustrating time, know that your course is being corrected for reasons beyond your understanding. You may be being forced into taking a new approach, which will become clear with patience and perseverance, as well as an ability to analyze your situation without attachment to the outcome. So, again, destruction and like, natural disaster.
I was trying to think of any sort of like everything at the Weasley's house, if we're thinking about weather specifically, didn't seem very, it seemed very like pretty perfect as far as temperature. That's just what I imagined.
The only thing I'm thinking about, which is what I honed in on, you know, was the tension between Molly and the twins.
Yes, I think
and there the was destruction some, of yeah. their order forms and the destruction of their toffees and like all of this hard work being right. all for naught because their mom doesn't support their creative endeavors.
Right. Get with it, Molly, because that could be very lucrative. So chill. And yeah, I would think about their relationship too. I mean, you know, we know they're upset and they didn't say goodbye when they left, but that's kind of a little bit of stormy weather and, you know, that relationship there.
Mm-hmm. Let's see what else. Hailstorms may be brief. Oh, okay, I'll read about it. But the balls of ice that pelt the ground can leave destruction in their wake, injuring people and animals and destroying entire crops. And I just think of Molly just shitting on their dreams.
Right. Right. She is the hailstorm in this chapter.
Yeah. And she's always the hailstorm whenever the shit hits the fan.
She's always the enforcer, the bad cop, the no fun mom stereotype.
Yeah. And yeah, that's all I can come up with.
That's a hard one. These were two, this was tricky. I can't think of anything. When I was thinking it was like hail to the chief, I was like, I don't know about that either. So I think we did a good job when we were talking about destruction. So.
Yeah. Alrighty then. And now we move on to the final exercise, fan fiction time.
This was hard as well.
Yeah.
For me.
What did you come up with?
You know, kind of the best thing I could come up with, and I don't know. I know this character's fate. So let me just put this out there because
oh, Cedric Diggory?
Yes.
Okay.
Because
yeah.
Was
yeah. I thought you did. I just didn't know if you had forgotten or not.
Yeah. No. It was such a big deal at the time. When the character, you know, goes away. that because I don't think that had happened in one of the series yet. So that was kind of a big thing. So I just kind of honed in on him, and yes, because he played Edward, whatever. But what if he was like a pompous ass? Like, that's instead of being kind of humble and, you know, like, oh, dad, chill. Like, what if he had more of a Draco Malfoy? Like, hell yeah, I kicked that guy's ass and, you know, kind of left out some details. First of all, I think that would have soured the experience getting to the Quidditch World Cup just to, you know, I don't know. Granted, his dad is kind of making an ass out of himself. What if Cedric was just like, hell yeah, you fell off your broom. That was awesome. Like, that's the best I could do.
Well, first of all, he wouldn't be a Hufflepuff.
True. 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 True.
If he would like that, he would be a Slytherin. And then there'd be a question of, would Draco Malfoy even be on the Quidditch team? Because they're both, Draco and Cedric, play the seeker position.
Oh, okay. Okay. Can't have double seekers. Yeah, I guess.
No. Only one seer can reign supreme. But yeah, if Cedric was more pompous, I think in the beginning, like again, like this, it wouldn't make much of a difference. But of course, as you see Harry interact with Cedric throughout book four in a variety of ways, you know, obviously Harry would not be as inclined, obviously, to help Cedric in certain ways as he ends up doing later in the book. And probably there are some things that to pay Harry back for helping him, Cedric also helps Harry and probably wouldn't have done that either, which if he didn't have that help, things would have gone totally in another direction entirely, because they each give the other very pivotal, pertinent information for the book.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, so it's good that their relationship is good and they're kind of fine with each other. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I mean, I didn't have a lot of fan fiction. This, like I said, it was just kind of nice to have a nice chapter where things were chill. But what about you?
Yeah, mine was kind of building off the sort of what if Dudley could like bond with Harry. What if they had brought Dudley to the World Cup?
Oh my God. With because his it's like, attitude?
It wouldn't be the great. Again, they're already dealing with five minor children who can't do magic. So right. In terms of pure logistics, like bringing Dudley along is not really that big of a deal or a great, you know, burden or anything.
Do you think Dudley would have the like approach or the attitude that he has now, or would he be the Dudley that we kind of talked about that was embracing and curious about the wizarding world?
Well, I'm thinking the fact that maybe Harry would have, if they weren't quote unquote calling themselves friends, Dudley at this point would maybe just would have talked to Harry about a few things and maybe would have said, can I go? Can I come?
Yeah. I think that would be, I mean, again, that I think that storyline would be very interesting, and just to insert somebody like that kind of, it makes me think of Hermione in the, Trelawney's class. Trelawney, I hope I said that right. Yeah. And how she was kind of a naysayer, like this is all BS. Just to bring somebody with that kind of negative attitude toward the wizarding world into the setting would be quite interesting. I think you're kind of, I think me personally, because I'm like, oh, I think this is so fun and interesting, I would want to be there and curious. Like, what about somebody that would come in there and be like, this is totally bizarre and I hate it? Or would it kind of transition to the, he just be kind of enamored and really interested and intrigued?
Yeah, because I think there's, we don't, obviously we're not, this is not from Dudley's perspective, so this would be heavily dictated by, does Dudley truly have his own personal feelings and prejudice for the Wizarding World, or is he just not rocking the boat that his parents have, you know, created? Like, does, like, again, Petunia obviously has her own beef with, you know, her relationship with, you know, Harry's mother, her sister, like, all of that baggage. So, like, does Dudley have any of that sort of ill will for himself? Like, maybe possibly because of his pigtail?
Right, right.
Yeah, like, but it's not as hardcore as Petunia's, obviously. So,
right.
It's just the question of how far along is Dudley informing his own opinions or just, you know, just going with the flow of his parents.
Right. I'd be curious. I mean, and I don't know how much will you see Dudley in future books or whatever, but I'd be curious to see his kind of like evolution, if it's brought about. I'm having a feeling that they kind of, he kind of slowly fades away, but I don't know. I haven't read all the books yet. So.
So yeah, I don't know. I just feel like it's just so very sad that I felt Dudley was poisoned in this way by his parents.
Yeah, you know, and I think we talked about too that maybe he would continue that, or maybe he would really rebel against it and, you know, thinks the wizarding world is the bee's knees. I don't know. So.
Yeah. Alrighty then. And thus concludes our episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time and we will go over chapters 7 and 8, Bagman and Crouch, and the Quidditch World Cup. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.